Seamus Heaney Centre podcast. This is the second of two showcase episodes featuring extracts by our creative writing master students. In this episode, we'll hear work by Rebecca Brown, Carolina Garrigo, Rachel Hines, Maggie Doyle, and Dara McQuaid. Their work is performed by Joe Dow, Anna Healy, Thomas Finnegan, and Abigail McGibbon.
An extract from The Same Little Breaks in Your Soul by Rebecca Ellen Brown.
People are walking up and down the aisle, pausing to stretch in front of my seat where there is some space. There's a guy doing some squats, his front facing me, thankfully. I have curled myself into a ball, the blanket enveloping me like a hug. I'm halfway through my third movie, a superhero one. I had nearly burst into tears at the ending of Mary Poppins Returns and was hoping this would be an easy distraction. No emotion, just getting away for a bit. I forgot that Marvel is in fact very emotional and turned it off before the last few strings inside me snapped altogether. I look around, seeing most people are sleeping. There's a few faces lit up by screens, scenes playing in eyeglasses. I don't feel sleepy, even though I've been awake for well over 2 days. I spent the last night in my apartment trying to pack my entire life into 2 suitcases. I had to leave so many things behind. A big pillow that I got for my birthday, which I sat against every night. The air purifier I bought when I realised just how bad the dust would be for my allergies. In my first week, I got allergic conjunctivitis and woke up in the middle of the night screaming because I couldn't open my eyes. They were sealed shut with gunk. I asked the landlord if it would be okay to leave things behind when he came to my door that night. He had nodded, glancing into the room behind me. We couldn't understand each other very well, but he knew something was wrong. He brought his hand to cover his chest, sort of rubbing at it. "My heart breaks for you," he said. And I felt my ears fill with that awful pain when you hold in a sob. I realised right then just how alone I felt. Someone across from my row pushes a button above their head. A flight attendant appears and disappears after a brief exchange. She returns with a drink. Now I remember the best thing about long-haul flights. Complimentary alcohol. I fidget with my blanket. Alcohol is something I've self-soothed with before. Something I believed I absolutely needed before engaging in any kind of social event. Leaning forward slightly, I watch the person take a sip of a clear liquid. The ice dances inside the glass. Could be vodka, could be gin. I quickly recline back into my seat before I am caught voyeuring, tugging the blanket tighter around my body. I was out one night for a friend's birthday. Out of everyone there, I only knew her and one other person who was my co-worker. We hopped around a bunch of different bars, all the while I kept drinking and drinking to mask my discomfort. It was getting late when everyone but me and my co-worker decided to call it quits. We were absolutely hammered and wanted nothing more than to go to a club and dance. There was a place nearby that was below street level and it felt a bit like entering a secret society. It was heaving with people, their bodies swaying to the heavy bass. Within what felt like seconds, I lost my co-worker in the crowd and lost myself in the music and heat. After a while, I've no idea how long, I pushed my way to the bar to order another drink. A guy holding a platter full of drinks stopped me. He asked me my name, My age, where I was from, he seemed friendly, smiling at me, so I told him, and he took a drink from the platter, handed it to me, and told me to have fun. I downed it and made my way back to the dance floor. Things get a little fuzzy from here. I remember feeling very sluggish. My whole body felt heavy. Everything seemed to be in slow motion. There was a really tall guy next to me. He seemed to just appear out of nowhere. I can't remember his face, but he had a hat, like a baseball cap. He put the cap on my head and just sort of watched me. I kept dancing. I didn't know what else to do, but a seed of panic was sown into my chest. I took off the cap and tried giving it back, but when I did, he put it back on my head, spun me round until my back was pressed into his front. Then he put his arm across my chest, holding me to him. He was holding me so tight, I couldn't move away. I felt like I couldn't breathe. He was pushing himself against me and I felt sick. The last thing I remember is looking up and seeing my co-worker. He pushed the guy off me and told him he was my friend. He brought me out of the club and put me in a taxi. He kept asking if I was okay. I threw up on the street after the taxi stopped. All I could think was that I wasn't worth it. It's free. I could just have one drink. Ease the weight in my chest, settle the butterflies in my stomach. I bury my head in my hands. I know it's not a good idea, but I want to drink so bad. I want to forget who I am, where I'm going, where I'm coming from. I want to exist as some wasted nobody for just a moment. No thoughts, no memories, no responsibilities. Just a passenger on a plane travelling through. Getting through. I open my eyes to look into the darkness of my hands. A little light seeping through the cracks between my fingers. I hear footsteps walking up the aisle. I peel my hands away and see a flight attendant approaching my section. I let them pass.
An extract from Here Lies Jeff by Carolina Garrigo.
Interior Jeff's apartment. Who knows? Because time is a construct in purgatory. Jeff is a crusty-looking, skinny white dude in his 30s. He's a ghost, and not a very good one. With him is Manny. He's a kind-looking Hispanic fella in an impeccable suit. And right now, he's not happy.
Listen, buddy, we gotta talk about your rent.
Seriously, dude? After you basically just fired me?
Totally different situations.
Not really. No job, no rent, no apartment. It all goes back to you. So really, it's you we need to talk about. Let's start with the Times Square motif in your office. That is so 2002.
Yeah, classic defensive techniques. And remember, I'm not here as Manuel, your caseworker. I'm here as Manny, your landlord, and dare I say, your friend.
So you'll chill until business picks up?
No.
Well, then you're no friend of mine.
But I'm here with solutions. Option one, you move out to a smaller, more manageable place. Option two, you get a new roommate.
Both terrible options. Didn't I stop having to deal with this when I, died?
You know that's not how this works. Now listen, we all know you suck at your job, but we're willing to give you one more chance.
Really?
But you're still going to need a roommate to help pay for what you call an apartment.
Fine, I'll look for one tomorrow.
Fab, already found one for you.
In appears a bright-eyed, smiling Indian woman. This is Mel, in her 30s.
Who's this?
This is Mel. She's a new arrival and your new roommate. Mel, this is Jeff. He's the worst. But he has nice hair and doesn't smell bad.
Works for me.
Great. Mel, let's touch base tomorrow for your orientation. Jeff, Be better. Okay, have fun, you too.
Manny disappears.
Nice place. Huh? Better than the dump I lived in before. Before. In real life, on Earth. I don't know how to put it exactly. Are we on Earth? It's almost like, did we even go anywhere? Everything looks the same. It's like we never left.
Didn't your caseworker go over everything with you?
Manny? Oh, yeah, he's great. His office looks over Times Square. I mean, I've never been. Looks beautiful. Maybe I can go to this Earth's version.
We're not on another planet, Mel? We're not Scientologists or fundamentalist Mormons. Well, you might be.
Nope. Right. Sorry. It's still new. Just died, you know, brain dead, the huge. Just looks like Earth, you know? Can get confusing.
Purgatory is modeled after it. Because what sucks more than purgatory? Nothing. But Earth comes close. The perfect setting for our eternal damnation.
I thought that was hell.
Do I look like an encyclopedia? Like, ask Alexa.
Purgatory has Alexa?
Jeff groans.
Well, anyway, like I said before, great place. Mind if I look around?
Apparently it's your place now too, so have at it. Mi casa is a casa, and I have to share it with you.
Cool. Thanks. Rad.
Mel looks around, takes a few steps into the messy kitchen.
A landline. Cool. Retro. Why?
Shitty reception up here. Seeing as we're in another plane of dimension or whatever. Although occasionally Verizon gets a bar too.
I've got AT&T, so no luck, I guess.
Yep, no luck.
Jeff turns on the TV as the Jeopardy theme song plays.
Jeopardy's on? Still getting used to the TV schedule here.
Jeopardy's the only thing on. We only get one channel.
Mel moves to sit on the couch next to Jeff to watch the episode.
No. No sitting. This is my couch.
Oh, sorry.
My aura is very sensitive. If anyone gets close, I get major anxiety.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Very slowly, she perches on the end of the couch, Jeff watching her out of the corner of his eye.
So, this is really all there is to watch here?
Yes, Melanie.
It's just Mel.
Well, Mel, for your information, sometimes we get the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels.
That's not too bad.
In Cantonese.
Oh, cool. That cultured.
Sure. Now I can perform the role of Jack Sparrow in Shanghai Disneyland. Oh, wait, I can't. I'm dead.
Okay, then. At least you have Jeopardy.
Well, when all you've had is Jeopardy for what seems like a millennium, then it gets a little less fun, seeing as I know all of the answers.
Really?
No, not this episode, actually. It's quite new.
They watch in silence. The show goes to commercial. It's an outdated hour-long infomercial, obviously.
So, how long have you been in purgatory? Or limbo, or whatever.
A while.
Do you miss your past life, or whatever it's called?
Not really.
Well, why haven't you passed on?
Do I just go around and ask you personal questions about your life, Mel?
You haven't asked me anything.
Well, let's keep it that way, shall we?
Okay. I think I caught you on a not-so-hot day. That's cool. We all have those. I'm just gonna pop on over to my room and catch a few Z's before ghosting tomorrow. Which is what I was assigned, by the way. Yeah, just like you. Did you also have to find out your job via a BuzzFeed quiz? Cute, right?
Jeff responds by turning the volume higher on Jeopardy.
Right, yeah, cool. We'll talk tomorrow. Nice to meet you. Good night.
This is an extract from my script, Spontaneously Floating, by me, Rachel Hines. I hope you enjoy.
Exterior, City Park Garden, day. Rebecca and Poppy are floating above a Memorial Park bench, debating something. Poppy reading through her bird book intently.
Come on, it's clearly a magpie.
I don't know. Looks like a blue tit to me.
It's a magpie.
I thought you couldn't remember things. Do you remember anything else? It might come back.
My memory.
I suppose it might.
Poppy floats to get a closer look at the bird.
Did you lose your memory when you started to float?
I'm not sure.
Well, do you remember what happened before you started to float?
My mum was reading me a book.
We're asleep.
Why do you even need to know?
Oh, this is fucked up. We shouldn't be floating. We're asleep.
Rebecca points at Poppy's nightwear, reassuring herself that it's all just a bad dream.
Bad words.
We just need to wake up.
Rebecca begins to run towards a wall.
Oh, I wouldn't.
She hits the wall and falls to the ground like before. Getting up, she floats again.
Ouch!
We're not asleep. These are just my favourite clothes.
Rebecca looks down at her clothes. Her jeans. She plays with the large waist, far too big on her, and an oversized jumper.
Why are my clothes so big?
Don't ask me. I didn't dress you.
Poppy rolls her eyes. Rebecca, still looking puzzled at her large clothes, notices a ring on her ring finger.
I'm wearing a ring?
Well done, Sherlock.
You are so sassy.
Thank you.
Poppy is playing hopscotch on the pavement, doing forward rolls in between each movement like a gymnast.
Come, play with me.
What's the point?
It might help you remember.
Rebecca hesitates. Poppy floats across the hopscotch board, jumping with her big slippers. Rebecca tries not to grin at Poppy being cute. Then the panic sinks in again.
Poppy, remember what?
Why do you need to know everything? Why can't we just be here now? Play hopscotch.
We are floating. We are literally floating, Poppy. This is weird. Do you not want to go home?
If you don't want to float anymore, why don't you just go to the clinic?
What?
Nothing. It was a sneeze.
What clinic?
The deflotation clinic.
Why didn't you mention this before?
It's nice to have someone to play with for a while.
Do you know where it is?
I might.
Well, can we go?
You can.
Where is it?
Poppy hesitates for a moment, thinking. Rebecca looks relieved at a solution.
I'll show you where it is. If you bring me to the play park?
The play park?
Yes. I've never been.
You've never been to a play park?
No.
Poppy, seriously, where is your mum? Oh, fine, let's go to the play park.
Fuck yes.
Poppy, don't say that.
Hello, I'm Maggie Doyle and this is an extract from my story, The Storm.
January. It's the 1st of January 2020 and the world is at my feet. From the summit of Slieve Croob, I can see the past draining down the funnel of the old year, leaving a weak but hopeful sun hiding in the washed out light of the winter sky. Every New Year's Day, I stand at the foot of the mountain staring back at the old year. With gratitude, I bid it farewell and turn to move on. Head bowed against the chilled wind as I begin to climb this mountain of the hoof. With gratitude, I bid it farewell and turn to move on. Head bowed against the chilled wind as I begin to climb this mountain of the hoof in the foothills of the high morns. It is the place I return to time after time to touch the sky and reset my heart. The path is as familiar as an old friend. It never changes as it winds upwards through bog, heather and sedge. The gurgling baby laggan spills downwards through the marsh grass, laughing at the wind and gathering strength for the charge to the widening riverbed below. It's always reassuring to stand at the source. A baptism of sorts, cleansing and renewing. This is the land of stiles and streams, little gateways to new beginnings. It has been calling me home from the city for years, and now we are back, living on our hill farm in Decamet, rerouted and content.
The walk forces me to breathe more deeply, to focus on the road ahead and reach for the sky. In the distance, I see the golden cranes flash in the city estuary where the river finishes its race. In my heart, I know it wants to turn back, rushing upwards to the little townlands of Dree and Drin, Finnis and Begney, where the landscape is softer and the light is rainbowed. I feel so small standing here on the path that narrows to present a crown of cairns spread out across the summit. Burial chambers holding centuries of secrets, resting in peace here on this wild mountainscape. The ancient views are spectacular and humbling, and on the south face I see the ghosts of chieftains bow in awe at the panorama of peaks gleaming in the distance, backlit by the white gold light of the hidden sun. Slieve Donard is every inch the leader after whom it was named, strong, dependable, and always there for me and the gazing world. I am so grateful and whisper a silent prayer of thanks. Thanks for the chance to come back and fulfill our dream to grow music on Decumit Mountain. Up there, where my grandfather turned his land with heavy horses and an iron plough, we have rebuilt the old barn and stables to plant a bed of melodies. January is layered in hues of slate and stone. And on the 14th day, the mountain sheep are spreading out, taking shelter from the threatening wind behind clumps of weathered rushes and windbushes. From my kitchen window, I watch the relentless rain beating down on the slender fir trees at the bottom of my garden. A weather bomb in the form of Storm Brendan has exploded on our horizon. 80-mile-an-hour winds from deep out in the Atlantic are shaking our world, and it is shocking to witness. The lights are blinking, and I am afraid of the early darkness that will creep soon down the mountainside. I wait in silence for this storm to pass. The clock's tick-tock is comforting as I try not to think about the forecast predicting more violent weather to come this year. Amongst the firs, I focus on the dead tree standing still in the storm. A ghost among the greenery. Translucent and skeletal, it stands tall in its nakedness, refusing to bend. Such dignity and inner strength. Not ready to go. We'll just lie low beneath the winds, I tell you. And so we do for days until the world stops shaking. In the farmyard, our little music barn waits for the first chords to push through like green shoots from old stones. Deep down below the floor, it holds the memory of my dancing ancestors spinning reels and jigs at harvest time. The echo of their songs and laughter warm the empty space until the lamp is relit and we welcome our music-making friends to the stage. They bring stories from the four corners of these windswept islands, stories about terrible beauties told wildly in jazz rhythms that echo across the snow fields all around us. The mountain is pulsing with the adrenaline rush, and we feel inspired on this new ground. Our hearts are reset. We are in time with ourselves.
Mum and Dad, an extract from the play Pieces by Dara McQuaid.
Hello? Oh. Well. Yes, we'll be here. All right. Thank you. Yes. for letting us know. Yes. No need. We'll be fine. Just ring us when you know.
Well?
It was the detective.
Yeah.
They found a body.
Oh.
It's a girl. Around her age. No wallet or anything by the body. So they're not sure it's her.
Oh. Oh, thank God. Thank Christ, Mary, Joseph and the lot of them.
It still might be her.
No, it's not. I can tell in my gut it's not her. I know these things. I'd feel it. Where was it?
Where was what?
The girl's body.
In the mountains. Where else?
Oh, bless that poor girl and her family, but our aunt's things were found in town. They'd never have made it to the mountains with her. She'd have put up a fuss. Giving the fellas a good old bollocksing. That's our Anne. Taking no shits from anyone.
Here.
But I bet she's out there now, talking the ear off some chap at a bar in Mali or someplace exotic like that. It's not her.
Is this whole thing a punishment, do you think?
What are you talking about?
Nothing.
Nothing indeed. You know her as well as I do. Anne's a fighter. That bright red beret. Think about the beret for a little second.
She was 12.
We were on holiday in Nice.
You stank of garlic.
When in France.
We took her to a department store. They had such lovely clothes. I could have died.
Remember how she used to run off in places like that?
No.
Because I was always the one sent off to catch her. So you could look at the shoes.
That's where it was from. Top floor, in a bargain bin.
Buried in there. But somehow Anne had dug herself into this huge trolley of browns and deep greens and burrowed out with the one colourful thing in there. That was it, sorted for her. Her thing. You tried to convince her out of wearing it. Ratty, you called it. It was huge on her, almost covered her whole head. But Anne could put her foot down like no other child I'd ever met. That was that. We got the hat. And she wore it evermore.
That's always the way you remember that story. That she decided for herself.
She did.
You don't remember finding that stupid berry in the pile, placing it on her head. You were the one who put it into her silly little head. She wore it for you, you daft old man.
It's her hat. She fought for that hat.
Well, she threw that hat on the street. She didn't care for it anymore. She didn't want to be. She doesn't want it.
We're keeping it for her here. Safe. For when our Anne comes home. She's coming home.
Our Anne. Why did we name her that? Anne.
After my aunt, I think.
Anne. What a boring name. What if we called her Annie? Would she have been different? Try less hard, you know? To stand out. Or Anya. Yeah. I've always liked Anya. Why not Aoife after my mum? Or something exciting like Annabella. Why was it Anne?
Everybody needs a name.
But was that always meant to be her name? Seems so, so small. That's it. You're an Anne. Plain Jane Anne for the rest of your life and after. That's all you'll ever be. Just a name and a memory. Stupid hat. Do we forget everything else? Is that what happens? Until it all just fades. Anne. Is that who she is now? Another missing girl. Another Anne. Amongst thousands.
Come here.
What if it is her?
It's not.
You can't promise me that.
Oh, I can't. I know. I have to.
Okay. She's out there.
And she's coming home.
For her little red berry. Hello?
The Seamusini Centre podcast is created in a small back room by Stephen Sexton and Rachel Brown. This episode was produced and edited by Dara McQuaid, Craig Jackson and Connor McCafferty, and recorded at the Sonic Arts Research Centre at Queen's. The actors throughout were Joe Dow, Anna Healy, Thomas Finnegan and Abigail McGibbon, with direction by Dara McQuaid. With thanks, as always, to our writers, and to Nick Boyle for his music. Special thanks to creative writing lecturer Michael West.